Welcome back to McClanahan Academy. I've got a new course for you, and it is Reconstruction and Recreation. We're going to start with Presentation 1. I'm really excited about this class. In this particular presentation, I'm going to give you an overview of these two ideas. What is Reconstruction and what is Recreation? What do I mean by that? What are we going to talk about in this particular course? And I have to start by saying that Reconstruction is one of the most studied areas in American history. There is new literature coming out on it at all times. Unfortunately, that new literature is very narrow in focus and what they're doing with it. So Reconstruction is perhaps one of the most contentious areas in the American historical profession. And I think that's because of the nature of the period, because of what it means for America today. But most people miss that, and they miss Reconstruction in the long view, the long durée, as Browdell called it. They miss the synthesis. And so I'm going to talk a lot about that in this particular class. We're going to look at some things. We're going to look at how Reconstruction affected the United States, not just in the static areas that you often hear, 1862 or 1861 or 1863, depends on when you start, to 1877. But those years, 1861 is when we're really going to start this, all the way up until the modern era. Reconstruction is not just a 15-year period or 14-year period or whatever. It is a long period of time. And so many things in the United States were affected by this process. So let's look at that particular idea. 1861 is where I'm going to start this class. We're going to start it right when the war begins, because that's when the South is out of the Union. And that's when the Republican Party begins to remake the United States. And that is the key to understanding Reconstruction. The recreation, or the refounding, as Eric Foner actually called it. Eric Foner says some right things. In this particular case, he is right. He calls Reconstruction a second founding, because it is. You look at what happens with Reconstruction and all the areas of the United States that are affected by Republican Party policies, and you can certainly see that what we have in the United States beginning in 1861 is a recreation of the Union. And there are so many things to talk about there. But we're going to talk about the political recreation of America. We're going to talk about the economic recreation of America. We're going to talk about the legal recreation of America, the diplomatic recreation of America, and the social recreation of America. Now, you can put legal and social maybe together in some ways. Within the diplomatic area, we're going to talk about military history. There's so much going on here. So many things are affected by the war and how we think about the war and how we think about the powers of the central government, what it can and cannot do. And that's really the key theme to understanding what happens in Reconstruction. It's the expansion of the powers of the central government vis-a-vis the states. So when I say in the next bullet point, it's the process by which the United States was recreated, not reconstructed. The Union wasn't reconstructed. Now, perhaps during the Johnson administration, perhaps in the period when Lincoln was still alive, we were talking about real reconstruction, putting the Union back together. But once Lincoln is dead, and once Johnson essentially is cut out of the process because of the supermajorities by the Republican Party in the Congress, there's no more reconstruction. This is recreation. Modern historians, both on the left and the right, neoconservatives, admit this was the goal from the beginning. The goal was to recreate the United States from the Republican Party. This is what they wanted to do. Now, people like Eric Foner downplay the economic part of it. And the literature in the last, say, 30 years has moved away from an understanding of Reconstruction as these individuals being tied in to the business interests of New England. They certainly were. And Reconstruction was bigger than just what's going to happen to former slaves in the South. And that's what Reconstruction literature almost always focuses on now. What happens? How about race relations? How about gender relations? How about all these things that the Marxists like to focus on? It's race, class, gender. What about class conflict? The big picture is something else. The big picture is a complete transformation of America from a federal republic to a unitary state. So most of the focus by historians has been on the South, but the whole Union, now nation, and that term is important, was affected by Reconstruction Republican Party policies. We now have a national government, not a union, but a national government. And that means something. That has That has a deeper meaning than just, we're going to throw this word around. We often say, this is our nation's capital. This is our national government. No, we didn't have that before 1861. We certainly, I mean, even if you want to go a little further in, we didn't have that till the war, till the states were essentially destroyed by Reconstruction. Now, you could say, well, they weren't destroyed. They still exist. We still got... But the way the legal process now is set up, and the way that we have the court systems ruling on these things, the way that we have the bottom and the top pushing on the states, there is no state authority anymore. Clearly, the Constitution did not change other than the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments during this time period. And you could branch that out to say the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th Amendments. And we're going to talk about that. The Constitution, though, you still have the 11th Amendment, you still have the 10th Amendment. Those weren't superseded by anything. The 14th Amendment didn't change that. We'll get into that in the course. We'll talk about the 14th Amendment. We'll talk about all these things in this particular course. But the fact is, we have a recreated United States. So let's talk a little about historiography, because I think that's important to understand. Historiography. The oldest interpretation of Reconstruction, which appeared right around the turn of the 20th century, is called the Dunning School. This was the dominant interpretation of the period until the 1940s and 50s. Reconstruction, according to this particular school of thought, in the words of Claude Bowers, was a tragic era. In fact, he wrote a book by that title, A Tragic Era, where corruption ruled and the radical Republicans sought to run roughshod over the southern states. It is pro-reconciliation, meaning that we had these radical Republicans, they were causing problems because they were doing illegal things. There was all kinds of corruption in the South. One of the reasons why this particular school of thought is, or this particular historiographic school is denounced and demonized today is because people like William Dunning and Claude Bowers and E. Merton Coulter and others were racist. And they didn't believe in African Americans' capacity to govern. Now, some of that had to do with the evidence they were seeing, and some of it was also based on the fact that African Americans at this particular time had just been freed and they didn't have any education, they had no property, most of them. Some of them did, and of course those individuals did play a role in the government. And what I don't think that many of these historians read these books or read the documents these people are looking at because, and I'll get into this when I look at some books you should read, when you look at the primary sources, they're using the same primary material. Or they're using a very eclectic group of primary material. It's not, they're not using just simply white Southerners as the basis of this. They're also looking at what white Northerners said. White Northerners said. And African Americans themselves. They do this. Again, people like Foner, if you read his preface to his book Reconstruction, which I'll talk about in a minute, he talks about this. These people are criticized for being anti-black or white supremacists, for seeing black Southerners as childlike, passive victims who are violent, ignorant, and easily manipulated, and for taking white Southerners at their word without any critical review of other perspectives. But this isn't true. This is not what Dunning and his students were doing. So I think this is not really a valid critique. The Dunning School hasn't really been discredited. It's simply reinterpreted. Reconstruction has been reinterpreted. And that's not to say that Dunning wasn't racist. He was. It's not to say that some of this racism didn't filter into his books. They did. Or the students of his, it filter into it. Yes, Americans in 1900 were racist. And they had a view of black Americans that does not fit modern sensibilities. But it doesn't mean that their perspective on corruption in the South, which they did place at the feet oftentimes, not of black Southerners, but of carpetbaggers and scalawags, and the people that controlled the government. This is where they really focused their ire and their attention. It was that particular part. And they didn't say that black Southerners didn't have a role in some of these things. They said they would have a negative role. The situation with Foner is that they say they'd have a positive role. So we have interpretation here that's going on. It's not necessarily the information has been discredited. It's been reinterpreted. That's what history is. It's reinterpretation. History is interpretation of information. And the Dunning School is valuable because it looks at, particularly Dunning's book on Reconstruction, it looks at history in the long view. It looks at the period. It goes into detail on things that the Foner and people don't even talk about. Same thing with E. Merton Coulter. I had a seminar on Reconstruction in graduate school, and the professor, I won't name, who ran the seminar, it wasn't Clyde Wilson, who ran the seminar, was very critical of Foner because of the narrow view of Reconstruction, because they didn't, the time period, number one, and because they didn't bring in things that the Dunning School did. Dunning had a chapter on foreign policy, for example. Now, Foner's book on Reconstruction brought that in, but it's a horrible chapter. I mean, it's one of the worst parts of the book. He doesn't do a very good job of any of that stuff. He focuses exclusively on what he wants to talk about. So, which is the central actors in the role in his mind are African-Americans, which, I mean, there's an important part. So you can look at this period and say, okay, well, we needed to think about some other things with Reconstruction, but Dunning hasn't been discredited, just reinterpreted. Now, progressive critics charged that the Dunning School was too hard on Johnson. And during the 1920s and 30s, there was an attempt to revitalize Johnson's reputation as a man dedicated to a firm understanding of the Constitution. These historians also sought to attach a Hamiltonian economic agenda to congressional efforts to reconstruct the South. And this is 100% accurate. Now, I've been very, and it's not because I read these progressive historians. I mean, Howard K. Beale is the one who really did a lot of this, and I've read Beale's book. But his interpretation of Johnson is 100% spot on. There's no doubt that Johnson couldn't do anything more than Lincoln could. I mean, look, we don't know what would happen if Lincoln survived because he was killed, but should Lincoln have survived, I'm not so certain he would have been better than Johnson at handling Reconstruction. And Johnson was a resolute defender of the Constitution in this particular time period. You have to give him credit for that. He was vetoing legislation because he saw it as unconstitutional, not because of racism. This is what is going to be, this is how people are going to hammer Johnson moving forward. So this interpretation of Johnson needs to be considered when you look at things. And unfortunately, those in the modern profession don't do that. They just say Johnson's a racist. So then we can't listen to anything he had to say. It's all about race. This is an anti-intellectual position. Now, W.B. Du Bois wrote a book entitled Black Reconstruction in America, where he was very critical of the Dunning School. This is really the opening salvo in an attempt to place the freedmen at the center of the drama, to claim that Reconstruction was in fact a political revolution that had Marxist overtones. Du Bois was a Marxist. There's labor and capital conflicts. Claimed all histories to that on the subject of that period were racist. And so Du Bois was setting a stage, and this is Foner read Du Bois and said, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. He admits it. In his 2014 update to his book, he admits it. He read Du Bois, and that was it. Now, of course, Foner comes from a Marxist, a Stalinist family. I mean, these people are just despicable. Stalinists. Eugene Genovese, who was, Foner was Genovese's student. Foner's best book is Free Soil, Free Labor, Free Men, which Genovese had a hand in helping him produce. But Genovese was very critical of Erich Foner because he never denounced anything that the Stalinists did. I mean, these people are awful. The Foner family is downright awful. Now, race and racism become the central focus of Reconstruction literature in the 1950s. Johnson was a racist and a bigot who simply wanted to keep blacks from voting. Radical Republican leaders were true egalitarian revolutionaries who had broad support from all sectors of Northern society. Black Southerners were active, eager, and enlightened participants in the process rather than passive victims. Black Southerners were also the central figures in the period. This is the new historiography. Reconstruction was thwarted by persistent racism of the North and the South. And so the people that advocate this position are those like Erich Foner, James McPherson, Hans Truffaut, and Kenneth Stamp. This is the modern interpretation, and just about all literature that's produced on Reconstruction now is funneled through this lens. The old stuff, Foner says it was discredited, and discredited is his term, by objective scholarship. This is not objective scholarship. This is biased scholarship swung to the other direction. There is a middle ground. But it's to claim this is objective is laughable at best. It's not objective. These people have an agenda. And these people have biases, just like the Dunning School supposedly did. The Dunning School was, I mean, these people were actually Republicans. Dunning was a Northerner. Dunning was very hard on the South, very critical of the South. But yet he saw Reconstruction as a bad period for American government, for American society. He was a reconciliationist. He thought it was bad for America. Long term. So some of the things we're going to talk about in the class, we're going to talk about political and governmental consolidation, the centralization of power in Washington, D.C., and a loss of federalism or state power. We're going to talk about the creation of the American national government, the legal challenge of secession. We'll look at that. We'll talk about the rise of executive government, because all of that stuff has its origins in Reconstruction. We'll talk about economic reconstruction, the central government promotion of industry, commerce, and finance. This is the Hamiltonian or American system foisted on America writ large. So once it's not just the South that's going to go through this. The New South is certainly part of this, but also the North. And we'll talk about the Gilded Age and the New South. The Gilded Age is certainly created by Reconstruction. And we'll talk about the rise of populism and the reaction to that. We'll talk about poverty in the South. We'll talk about the new American economic order and the reaction to these things, North and South, and how Americans dealt with this new Hamiltonian or American system, this new neo-mercantilism, this new central authority that's going to control the economy. We'll look at legal reconstruction, the Civil War amendments, the Progressive Amendments, the judicial revolution that took place because of Reconstruction. All those things are important. It's all part of a bigger process. The United States is being recreated from a federal republic to an empire, a union to empire. We'll talk about diplomatic reconstruction, aggressive foreign policy, and the spread of American liberty and democracy. We'll talk about American imperialism and the military component of that. We'll look at the establishment of American military bases. All these things factor into Reconstruction. We'll talk about, of course, social reconstruction, the changing role for minorities in America, which includes American Indians on the reservation system, which is created because of Reconstruction, right? I mean, all this stuff is created because of Reconstruction. We'll talk about civil rights and civil liberties. We'll look at Jim Crow. Where does Jim Crow actually come from? It's not the South. We'll talk about art and culture and how the North begins to dominate these things. So this is a comprehensive course. You're going to get so much meat out of this. You're going to have a different view of America. We have two Americas in American history. We have America up to 1861, which is a Jeffersonian America. We have an America post-1861, which is a Lincolnian America, a centralized nation state. Two different Americas. You have to separate them. 1861 is the dividing point. It really is a watershed. And this is the problem with American government and society, because we still talk in terms of we have an America pre-1861. Some people still say, but we don't. We have an America post-1861. And if we understand that, we could maybe get to talk about the governmental structure pre-1861, but you're going to have a revolution of thought to do that. This certainly is North over South and North over West and Midwest as well. And you say that's in the North, but these people are different from New England. It should more accurately say New England over South and the West and the Midwest. So once the South is out of the Union in 1861, the Republican Party could operate the general government with little interference. This was a righteous cause to forge a new Union, to avenge the Union men who died in the war, to punish the South, to remake the South. These are things that were said, paraphrasing here, but things that were said by the Republican Party, and I'll give you examples of it as we move forward. It's one party, one branch control of the central government and the tyranny of the Republican Party. You are going to see the loss of the agrarian order in the United States. This is a decades-long process that is only accomplished by the sword and the fusion of government and finance capital. And the Midwest and the West, along with the South, are collateral damage. We know the South is damaged, but the Midwest and the West are collateral damage in this process. Northern ideology is going to dominate. The South is unable to mount a lasting opposition to Reconstruction or the transformation of the United States after returning to the Union in 1865. So you get a Northern view of the war, a Northern view of history, a Northern view of economics, a Northern view of mythology, this Northern mythology, a righteous cause myth, Northern culture, literature, art, values, all these things become ascendant because of Reconstruction. E. Merton Coulter has a chapter on sport in his book, The South During Reconstruction. We're going to get into that. It's culture. I mean, look, the fact that you have ball games in the South is completely alien to the South before this period of time, before Reconstruction. A couple of quotes here. I'm going to give you quotes throughout the class, but a couple of quotes about Reconstruction. James Russell Lowell, who was a New England poet, very famous New England poet, by the way, one of the most important New England poets, said, quote, "Is it not time that these men, Southern men, be transplanted at least into the 19th century, and if they cannot be suddenly Americanized, made to understand something of the country which was too good for them?" So we're going to Americanize the South. That's not what's happening here. They're northernizing the South and the West and the Midwest. One northern religious paper wrote that the North would have to, quote, teach the South line upon line, precept upon precept, by military garrisons, by bureau courts, by congregational churches, by northern settlers, by constitutional amendments, by Christian missionaries, by free schools, lectures, newspapers, and reading rooms. What be the first principles of social order, political eminence, moral worth, and industrial success? So the North is going to have to teach these Southerners what it means to be good Americans. This is the theme of the particular course. It's the North moving in and taking over the South and the West and the Midwest, not just socially, but also, as they're saying, industrial success, political success. The North is going to teach the South what it means to be an American. That is recreating America. It is rejecting Jeffersonian America for Lincolnian America. And that is why we need to discuss Reconstruction in the long view of the process. So I have listed here a number of books you should read. William A. Dunning, Reconstruction, Political Economic. You should read this book. It's in public domain, free. E. Merton Kohler, The South During Reconstruction, has sections of that book that nobody else has matched. Claude Bowers, A Tragic Era, another book in the public domain. Walter Fleming, Documentary History of Reconstruction, another book in the public domain. Philip Lee, Southern Reconstruction, the best look at Southern Reconstruction as a synthesis in a long time. This is a new book. It's very good. Eric Foner, Reconstruction, America's Unfinished Revolution. You should read it. It's a meaty book, just because he's got some good information in there. It's just that its interpretation is skewed at times. Howard Beale, The Critical Year, A Study of Andrew Johnson and Reconstruction. This is that progressive look at Andrew Johnson. W. Du Bois, Black Reconstruction in America. Again, a good book to read to know from Du Bois' position, one of the leading black intellectuals in America. James McPherson, The Struggle for Equality, Abolitionists and the Negro in the Civil War and Reconstruction. And finally, Kenneth Stamp, The Era of Reconstruction, 1865 to 1877. These are the books I think you should read. Now, as we get into different parts, I'll recommend other readings. But this is kind of like your core. These are your core readings. I don't agree with all these books. I don't agree with everything in any of these books. But that would be the essential reading that you would have and would be vital for your understanding of the period. So I'm really looking forward to getting this class. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you're excited about doing it. And let's get into presentation 2 for the next time.